You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, Cardinal fans. I'm Ozzie Smith.
Smith corks one into right down the line. It may go.
And you're listening to the Cardinals Insider Podcast.
Go crazy, folks. Go crazy.
Here's your host, Brent McMillan.
Welcome to the Cardinals Insider Podcast. I am indeed Brett McMillan. Good to have you with us today as we dive into the intersection of Cardinals history and current events with a group of 30 men and women who are reliving the 1946 Cardinals season day by day. That summer, of course, featured a tight pennant race with the Brooklyn Dodgers and ended with Enos Slaughter's mad dash to defeat the Red Sox in Game 7 of the World Series. Three of the participants going through this journey will join me today. John Davis is the group's organizer. You'll hear his voice first after my own. Ron Barger and Terry Farmer are getting the updates every day, and they will follow after John. Participants in the group live all over the country, a wide range of ages and backgrounds. John will share the how and why he started sending out these daily updates in a moment. What he's sending out is a daily recap of the Cardinals' on-field action from 46, as well as some tidbits of off-field happenings, too. The emails include links to box scores and articles pertaining to the days in question. The group goes back and forth discussing the history of that 46 season and also delves into some other baseball topics. If you love the history of the game, this one's going to be for you here on the Cardinals Insider Podcast.
John, let's start with you. How did this start? Where did this idea come from to walk everybody through the 1946 baseball season this summer?
Well, when I learned early on, Brett, that we were not going to have baseball this summer, or at least for a good portion of the summer, I was really disturbed by that because, like so many other Cardinal fans and other baseball fans, from March until October, breakfast comes with box scores. I couldn't imagine having breakfast without a box score. And so it occurred to me that the thing to do would be to find a Cardinal baseball season and to follow it through the magic of the internet, finding a box score. And while I did enjoy highlight games that the different stations were running in the evening, it wasn't the same as following a season through. And so I thought I would do that. And then I started thinking about, well, what season? And I started thinking back about the first season that I remembered. And I didn't remember in detail, of course, about 46. I was only three at the time. But I was really interested in 1946 because in 45, my dad came back with Musial and all the other guys from the war. He had, shortly after I was born in 43, dad shipped out, was deployed to Europe, and was there for 2 years. And he came back to a toddler that didn't know him and wasn't real sure what to make of this guy. And it wasn't until the summer of 46, when we listened to baseball games together on the old Philco radio we had there in the living room. And it was that summer that I fell in love with not only my dad, but also with baseball, Cardinal baseball in particular. I can remember very clearly in that living room, dad rolling up a pair of old, his old army socks and making a ball out of them. And when Dizzy Dean or when Harry Carey talked about the ball game, they were on different stations that year. KMOX didn't follow the Cardinals in 46, WIL, and I can't remember the name of the station that Harry Carey was on, but we would get one of the two in the evening. And if Musial would hit a fielder grounder at first base, dad would throw our ball, our little sock ball, over to right, and I'd try to catch it. And it was more fetch than it was catch, but I can remember that. Didn't remember the details of the seasons, so it made it fun to follow 1946. And as I was telling Ron earlier today, or you, Brett, sometimes it's a lot more fun to watch or to review that box score now that the Cardinals are back in action. On August 18th, 1946, the Cardinals won a doubleheader against Pittsburgh against Cincinnati instead of losing to the Cubs as they did on 2020. So this morning's review of the box scores was a little bit, or at least was at least half pleasant. But that's why 46.
And so what have you been doing every day this summer? What do you send out to folks?
Well, I have to thank Ron Barger for this, because when I started looking at those things, I journaled. I made some notes to myself about what happened so I could look back. And I journal each day so that I have something to do during this COVID thing. And I thought, other baseball fans would enjoy this. And so I sent it out to a few of my buddies, and Barger being my good buddy, and some of the local guys that I know and gals that are Cardinal fans. There were about 10 of us. And then Ron can tell you about how it spread from there. But that the content usually is just a paragraph about the game, who got the win, how many hits Musial got, whether it was an outstanding play. And then I put the box score in, and then I put all the games played that day. The Society for American Baseball Research is the site that I use most of the time to gather the data. But lots of times I'll get things from old issues of the Post-Dispatch, or I'll look through Wikipedia. And then I'll also look to see what else was going on in the world that day. And 46 was a very interesting year, not only in terms of baseball, but in terms of the country, as soldiers were returning from across the country. There was a good deal of labor unrest. We were trying to sort this thing out again, trying to get back to normal. And so there are a lot of interesting stories, and I'll put that in a little section that I call extra innings. And then I sat back and let the fun begin. Because as the people read it, guys like Terry Farmer and other guys will shoot back memories that they have, or things that they had found that related to the extra innings, or to Cardinal players, or to other players other players on other teams. And it's kind of an interesting then email exchange that goes back and forth. I plant a seed, and then I watch everybody else make the tree grow.
Ron, so what did you think the first time you got one of those? And the early ones went out as text messages. You've advanced to email at this point because there's so many folks getting these. But that first time you popped open that text and you saw the depth of what John was putting together, what was that like for you back in, April?
Well, you have to look at the time. I mean, we were in the middle of COVID-19. People were sheltering in place, and it was like this – it's like this ray of sunshine for the day. It brought us back to the normalcy of what our life had been, and the love of baseball, and particularly the Cardinal Nation. And so it was just like this joyful thing that I came to look forward to. And John mentioned this, but I wanted to share it. And so there are people in Dallas. I live in Dallas. My next door neighbor is from Columbia, Missouri, a very good friend of mine. Is a partner at a law firm named Randy Juergensmeyer, who is a Cardinal fan, lifelong Cardinal fan. And I sent them to him, to these gentlemen, to Randy and to Andy Rawlings. And I think Randy then reached out to Terry Farmer, who lives in Missouri, and brought him into this string. And so then Terry became part of it. And so the group began to expand. But this was really, if you think about it, it was a celebration of baseball. But I think at that time, it also brought relationships and socialization into our daily lives that we were probably missing at that point in time.
And Terry, I hear that you had a connection you found with somebody in the group that went way back in your life, and you didn't even know about it or know that that person was going to be there until you started looking through the emails that were there. Tell me that story.
Well, I'll go back and piggyback a little bit on what Ron was saying. Randy Juergensmeyer, I was a public school teacher in Columbia, Missouri. I still live in Columbia. And Randy was one of my students. And he sent me these texts maybe a week or so after they'd gone out originally. And I immediately realized that this was something that I wanted to get involved in. And one of the fellows that was also on this group, maybe added later on, was Andy Rawlings. Well, I had him in class too. So both of these guys are former students of mine from 30, 40 years ago. So that's how I got involved in it.
Can I interrupt just for a second? The funny thing about it, the funny thing about it was that Andy Rawlings didn't know that Terry was his teacher for the longest time. And like a month and a half goes by, and then I think there's an email that says, what junior high school did you go to in Columbia, Missouri? And he comes back and says, he realizes this is the Terry Farmer who's his teacher. And he goes, Mr. Farmer, is that you? Yes. And so you have to realize the connections that were existing that we had not uncovered at that point in time. And it's stirred things where the Juergensmeyer and Rawlings family, their parents have gotten together now. You see people connecting in a way that didn't exist, you know, prior to this email chain.
And I think one of the things I would throw in here is, and I find this happen a lot, I taught for 30 years, my wife taught for 25, is that you're so used to being Mr. to these people when they're students, that sometimes as they grow into adulthood, they never think of you again as just Terry Farmer or Ron Barger. They don't think of you by that name. And I think Andy probably looked at my name a few times, but it didn't make a connection with him until well on into the thing.
What does that say about baseball, that the fact that you've got people literally coast to coast and people of all different walks of life, different ages, and you all are bonded together by what you're reliving. What does that say about the power of baseball to bring people together?
You know, and interesting, I might offer just a quick thing on that. A couple of the guys that are part of this, guys that I've had lunch with on Thursdays for 20 years, one is a Cub fan and one is a Tiger fan, Detroit Tiger fan. And of course, that's one of the reasons when I put the box scores in, I include every game that was played in baseball that day, so, and with a link, so that if they want to pull out the details, they can do it. Well, there's a common love. There's a rivalry. There's a sense of, just as I was reunited with my father, every one of the people in this group has their own individual story that's just as compelling. And we all have that. It's the wonderful thing about the sport that we follow.
Whether it's you, John, as the guy putting it together, or you, Ron, or Terry, as you're reading it, what do you feel like you've learned about that 46th season or been reminded of that you'd forgotten or didn't know about that year? It really was a great year in Cardinals history.
Go ahead, Ron.
Well, Terry, you were alive. I wasn't. So you want to go first.
Well, I will tell you where I think these other guys on this link have found my involvement a little bit more intriguing is I grew up in a town where the old Brooklyn Dodger pitcher Preacher Rowe retired to after he left Major League Baseball at the end of the 1954 season. And so even though I was born in 46, so I'm a little younger than John, but everything John was saying about his relationship with his father and dealing with just the game and the whole aspect of following the Cardinals, which was basically the only major league team that you could hear where I lived in southern Missouri down in the Ozarks. But fortunately, as I grew up, Tom Rowe, Preacher's youngest son, and I were the same age. And so there was pressure on Preacher once he retired to probably start a little town team down there with fellows that were Tommy's age. And so a group of us were fortunate enough to be able to play for Preacher from the team that he started in about 1958. He was retired about 4 years. He started a town team down there, and then we played for him all up through high school. And that was a great experience because you were learning the game from someone who'd played it professionally. And Preacher was a fellow who loved to tell stories. And so it was very interesting for myself and everyone else to get sort of an insight into the game of baseball from that time period, from that era, from someone who'd actually lived it. So, and then what will happen is that when John posts these box scores, there will be names that will come up that I will remember Preacher at one time or another talking about some of these individuals in, you know, interactions that he'd had with them, things that he'd seen. And sometimes I'll, you know, go ahead and send that out as a separate email to share with the other is in the group.
And to be honest, you are a baseball encyclopedia, Terry. You know, John is this Renaissance man who throws in, you know, cultural and society and opera and all these kinds of things into this and gives pop quiz. And you're the encyclopedia, and you have everyone else who has their own little piece to play in this. And that's the marvelous part about it, is the amalgamation of people and what everyone contributes to this journey that we're all on.
Brad, I would add back to the original question about 46, what was happening in 46. We mentioned earlier the labor unrest, and that touched baseball as well. You'll remember in 46 was the first attempt to get the players organized, and they darn near were successful in Pittsburgh with that. That was one of the things I learned about 46. The other thing was the business of the Mexican League.
Yes.
The Cardinals had a wonderful pitcher by the name of Lanier, Max Lanier, who was 6-0, started the season. It had an ERA of 1.96 and was 6-0 going into the 1st of May. And he and Lou Kline and some other guy, Terry, I can't remember, headed off to the Mexican League and left the Cardinals without their ace pitcher. Cardinals won their 98 games. They had 13 pitchers that won a game during that year. And there was no end of supply of baseball players. You had all these replacement players that were there. Terry Wright during the...
Yes, absolutely.
And all the guys coming back from the war. And so Sam Bearden and those guys, the owners, didn't worry too much, because there was all this pent-up demand for baseball and all this supply of players. And so why pay them much money?
Right.
So that was one of the things from 46 that stuck with me.
And also Lanier and Kline and all those guys, you know, talk about the grass being greener on the other side. They got down to that Mexican League, got down there, hated it, hated the transportation. The money was nothing. It didn't go anywhere. And I think about 3 years later, in about 1949, they kind of came back dragging their tail between their legs, and the Cardinals took them back. I mean, they kind of re-signed them, and it was just sort of it was a waste of time for the people, for the guys that went to the Mexican League. There wasn't many of them, but it was a big mistake. True.
Sal Magley, I remember from one of the other.
Right. Magley went.
He went down, and there were some others.
To be able to have these kind of conversations, and on this program, we love this kind of stuff. We love getting in the weeds with baseball history. But, you know, not everybody that you meet on the street is maybe equipped or excited to talk to this level about the history of the game. So to have had this forum with all these countless number of people who are intrigued and interested the same way that you all are, I mean, talking about the Mexican League, I think that's great, but the average person on the street would have no idea. What's it been like for you three to journey through this and just to have a community of people that want to talk about the intricacies of the history of the game the way that you do?
Well, for me, it's especially meaningful during this COVID isolation stuff that we're all hunkered down in. I live in Johnson County in deep southern Illinois. Grew up in Anna, my hometown, and retired 8 years ago to a farm, and because I wanted to get further away. Well, I don't want to get this far away with COVID. I need interaction, and this is the first Zoom meeting I've ever done. Huh? And I kind of like seeing faces. emails kind of help, but having a community is pretty important, and having a community that is in love with the same thing I'm in love with makes it even more special.
I think one thing too that's been impressive to me is I'll be 75, John's a little older, but most of the guys that are involved in this are considerably younger, I think. And the fact that they would have this much interest in this time period and the post-World War II era, and I know they're Cardinal fans, most of them, but that's kind of refreshing to find people that would have that degree of interest in the Cardinals from that time period.
So. You know, and for me, one of the things that I did during this time as we were reliving the 46 season is I would work out on a bike at home. I watch Ken Burns baseball. Mm-hmm. And so, as you know, each inning is about 2 hours. And so you have, you know, over 18 hours of working out as you watch baseball, which would ignite certain things. And so little facts I would go research. And, you know, Stan Musial was an idol of mine growing up. And so I got to see him sort of at the end of his career, but just little facts, the fact that he had 1,615 hits at home and 1,615 hits away. And that his last hit was past a diving red second baseman by the name of Pete Rose, who went on to get, you know, the number of hits in the National League. And then you talk about, you know, just the things that came out, the Babe Ruth, that Babe Ruth's dad's bar is where center field sits for the Orioles stadium today, you know, and it just, or Henry Aaron was the last player with Negro League baseball experience in the major leagues. And the only reason why he became a Brave and not a Giant was because they were going to pay him $50 or more. Otherwise he would have been a teammate with Willie Mays. And so there's all these little things that have just percolated out of this conversation and in the research that we do just to be able to be part of the commentary and conversation that's ensued.
I think it's caused us, or at least in my case, each of us to maybe raise our game a little bit as we're looking back in statistics, because, you know, when you're hanging out with Terry Farmer and with Ron Barger, you better not come with your B game. You better be able to dig in there and find some interesting facts. You know, it's very important, I think, for us. We haven't mentioned, you know, we've talked about labor unrest and we've talked about other things. But 46 was also a very, very important reason. It's an important thing to remember in 46 that Jackie Robinson signed a contract with a double-A team and was getting ready to come in 47. And all of that is percolating, that important phrase that made the game in 47 much better than it had been in 46.
Yeah. One of the things I jump in here with a little bit tied into Robinson, when Preacher got signed in 1939 by the Cardinals, he was there for a short period of time, but Howie Paulette and Lanier, Harry Burkine, some of these people were in front of him. And he just kind of wasted away in Rochester for a few years, never got a chance to come up to the bigs. Oh, he'd get late call-ups and maybe get an appearance or so. But there was just so many people blocking him that ultimately I don't think he was ever going to have a chance to pitch regularly with the Cardinals. Well, when Branch Rickey went to Pittsburgh, he remembered that Preacher was in the Cardinal organization, and he thought that if he got Preacher with a pitching coach who could get him to throw something other than just, he was a one-pitch pitcher. He just threw nothing but fastballs. So he got him together with a guy named Rip Sewell at Pittsburgh, and Sewell taught him to throw off speed and breaking pitches, and he developed a screwball, and he even later on loaded up, you know, he would throw a spitter now and then. And when Rickey then went to Brooklyn, he brought Preacher with him after he'd been there for a year. In fact, they brought Preacher and Billy Cox both over from Pittsburgh. And that was sort of a strategic move because Robinson had come up in 47 and there were petitions that had been circulated in the Brooklyn, among the Brooklyn players, to not allow him to play on the team. Didn't want to play with him. And so Rickey answered that question about whether he was going to put up with any of that by packaging Dixie Walker, who was one of the most outspoken people against Robinson, and shipping him to Pittsburgh, which was just a bottom feeder at the time, in exchange for Preacher and Billy Cox. And so when Preacher and Billy Cox got to Brooklyn, Preacher had developed a number of pitches. He was able to become a pretty much top of the rotation pitcher for them from 48 until he retired at the end of the 54 season. So
those 21 wins that he got in 51, pretty sweet, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, he led the National League in one loss percentage in 51 and 52. And, it was a very effective pitcher. He didn't pitch poorly at Pittsburgh. He just didn't have any offense behind him. And so he didn't have a long career. He stayed healthy most of the time that he was pitching. And he really just, but he really had a really, really good 4 or 5 year stretch there with the Dodgers on sort of those storied teams of the early 50s. It seemed to get to the series a lot, but get beat by the Yankees every year.
You know, the 1946 season started for the Cardinals against the Pirates in St. Mm-hmm. Louis. And the Cardinals lost that ball game, 6-4, mm-hmm. I think was the score. Mm-hmm. And of course, from that time, that first loss to Pittsburgh to the Mad Dash, won it at the late in October. It was a great year.
Yes, it was.
Terry, you said something that reminded me of when you said Branch Rickey. And remember, mm-hmm. we talked about how Branch Rickey was such an important. I mean, he innovated the farm system for the Cardinals, and took quantity and started injecting that into the system. And then when he died, and I'll never forget this, I looked it up, and he was in a hospital in St. Louis. He went to Columbia for, I think, the Missouri Athletic Club was giving him an award, and he was speaking, and literally he lost consciousness while he was speaking. And you said, I remember where I was. I think it was at the Tiger Hotel, if I'm not mistaken, and you were at Mizzou, and you remembered that day.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely remember it. I was a freshman in college at the time. And had I known that Branch Rickey was going to be in town speaking at this, I was 18 years old, I would have tried to find a way to finagle myself into it. But I didn't find out all about what transpired till the next day in the paper. But, yeah, he died here in Columbia.
Yeah. It's amazing to hear you three relive this and just to have this sampling of what's going on every day on these emails and the discussion that it sparks. And what a neat experiment that you all have conducted, and it is fun to hear about. John, let's end on this. So we'll give you the final note. You're the guy that's the brain, this is your brainchild. You've come up with it. You're putting the work in to do it every day, and it's got to be a tremendous amount of work to assemble all of this and get it ready. What have you enjoyed the most, John? What's the thing about this whole journey that has touched you specifically and that you will take with you once the 46 season recap comes to an end?
Well, I don't have Dad anymore, but I've got Ron and I've got Terry. And I've got six other guys and gals. It's not just guys. We've got some gals in the group as well that I've fallen in love with this summer. And so that's what I'll take from the process.
The people who are part of this group really wanted to underscore how much they appreciate all John Davis has done to put this together. I mean, it's a lot of work, a lot of research on a day-to-day basis, but it's a fun read each morning. It's brought a lot of energy and a smile to some people's faces and really has cultivated a really great community of Cardinals fans from coast to coast. Really a neat endeavor that Mr. Davis has undergone here. There's a sister piece to this on television. It'll air on Cardinals Insider. You can check it out the weekend of August 29th and 30th. See where to watch at cardinals.com/insider or watch it on the Cardinals YouTube channel beginning next week. For everybody involved with today's show, my name's Brett McMillan. We'll catch you next time on the Cardinals Insider Podcast.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. You guys know I'm always up for a good MVP story, and one of the best stories is Wasabi Technology. Wasabi is the world's hottest cloud storage company, and it's become the go-to provider for professional and collegiate sports teams, including 20 Major League Baseball teams like the Red Sox and NHL teams like the Bruins and Vancouver Canucks. Even the Liverpool Football Club is getting in on the Wasabi action. So why is Wasabi the MVP? Well, Wasabi was purpose-built to free businesses from skyrocketing storage costs and unpredictable transaction fees that the Amazon of the world are charging. In fact, Wasabi is up to 80% less than those hyperscalers and doesn't charge a cent for businesses to access their data. From Wasabi's AI-enabled intelligent media storage, Wasabi Air, to the industry's only cloud storage service with triple protection against cyber criminals, data deletion, and ransomware, Wasabi's taking the lead in driving innovation in data storage and helping sports teams to unleash the power of their data. Wasabi, another Boston-based championship team.